Good afternoon, Chair. Thank you very much. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, officials of the Department of Transport, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here to... My name is Dr. Ditsubo Pengo, Chairman of the Board of Directors of the Fund. Dr. Watson, the CEO, will present. And next to me is Mr. Pando, who is also a board member and chairman of Operations and IT Committee. Next to him is our Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Yolande Van Biljon, and on our extreme left is the Chief Strategy Officer, Ms. Mantiti Kula. We are honored to be here today. Over to you, sir.
Thanks, Chair, members of the committee. The presentation was shared about a week ago. We noticed that the copies DOT had made are red, so we've got a second color. For your convenience. I know that...
I think pink, eh? I've got a problem with pink, so it's okay, but...
Chair, I'm cognizant of the time, so I'll try to move through it quite quickly, noting that the questions and answers are important. The structure really has four parts to it. The first is looking at where the business has come from to ensure committee members are on the same page. Then we look at the strategy itself, which is the strategic plan APP. That's where we're going. Alignment to government priorities, the NDP, the 9-point plan, and radical economic transformation. You can't talk about the RAF and not talk about money. And then, of course, the strategic challenges that we have to contend with. If we look at where the business has come from, our mandate is derived from our Act of 1996, amended in 2005. Essentially, it's to pay compensation for loss or damage wrongfully caused by the driving of a vehicle. We provide compulsory cover to all South African road users against injuries sustained or death arising from vehicle crashes. We're a Schedule 3A public entity. Various constitutional court rulings and legal precedents have shaped our mandate over the years. But in simple terms, on one hand, we provide a social security net. We indemnify the wrongdoer. We essentially stand in the gap for the wrongdoer. We rehabilitate and compensate. And, of course, we promote the safe use of all South African roads. If we look at our operational context, there are four legs to it. It's been about a year since we presented. Leg one is the legacy of the RAF. It's a very old regime, 70 years old. It's been insolvent since 1981. Is perceived as a business of law and adversarial engagement with the order of the day. It's very often and still till today perceived as a poorly run business. And the mandate certainly following democracy and the elections in 1994 has moved from protecting a wrongdoer in the legalistic sense of our law to supporting victims of crashes. There are design flaws, so the first would be that income and expenditure are divergent. The two are not related to one another. Income is determined on the basis of affordability, and expenditure is driven by the claims experience of the RAF. The fault-based or insurance or common law compensation system has significant exclusions. We see upwards of 46,000-47,000 people excluded from claiming on an annual basis. It's a subjective, legalistic, prolonged, and expensive administration, definitely not in tune with other social security arrangements in the state at the moment. Comprehensive social security policy as a whole has expanded beyond the fund's design and speaks about equitable distribution of resources to beneficiaries. At a business level, as we have the meeting, the key challenges would be claims expenditure is considerably higher than our income. We have 10 billion rand as of yesterday at 4 o'clock awaiting payment for people who have claims finalized. And the work is done, but literally just waiting for cash to come in. The average value of a claim has continued to increase exponentially over the last 10 years. In part, it's related to the claims mix, but it also is driven by supply and demand factors, where those who profit from the system essentially chase what is more profitable, which would typically be a more expensive claim. The actual rand value of legal expenditure has increased. The number of writs, because we aren't able to pay everything which falls due at the time, exceed 16,000 in the last financial year ended 31 March 2016. And of course, it's associated with a great deal of business disruptions where creditors who are impatient instruct the sheriff to attach, remove, and auction furniture and equipment often related to the very staff members who are responsible for payment. Fraud prevention and detection is a serious challenge we still deal with. While all this is happening, Chairperson, members of the PCOT, in the last financial year we received our third audit award, our second annual transport award, integrated reporting award from the Company Secretaries Association, the Institute of Internal Auditors awarded our CAE, Best Internal Auditor, the Institute of Risk Managers, which is a public and private establishment, awarded us for risk management. Our legal team won Business Women Awards. And of course, in the Deloitte Best Company to Work For, we were awarded bronze status, which is considerably higher than the value we got in 2012. And of course, going into this meeting, more than 80% of our APP targets have been met. If we look at the stats, these are audited figures. I won't spend a lot of time on it. I know committee members have seen our annual report, but in 2014-15, revenue increased by 11% to 22 billion. This is before the 50 cents per liter increase given to us last year. Claims expenditure grew by 26% to 28 billion, and we were short by 5.4 billion rand in cash. We received 173,000 new claims, made 242,000 payments, 23,000 for general damages, 9,700 or two-thirds of all road fatalities. The funerals were paid for by the RAS. 117,000 medical payments were made, 21,000 income payments, and the backlog or open claims, you often read about this backlog, which used to be 450,000 claims in 2011, reduced to 179,000 in the previous financial year. Now, Chair, we have these sessions annually. I remember the one we had last year, the power failed at about this point in the presentation. We update strategies, we update the ATP, but we never really stop to actually look at whether strategies work. So what we try to do in the next two slides is to show you what the strategic plan approved by PCOT, the Minister, and DOT, and the Board has achieved. The years go from right to left, so 2011-12, that's before the transformation was kicked off, and they run to 2014-15. For transparency purposes, we have the quarter three unaudited figures in the blue column. Because quarter four has ended, we know that these have changed, so I won't really dwell on those. But we've gone from an institution that achieved 54% of its targets to 84%. The balance of open claims reduced from 264,000 to 217,000. The average age of an open claim, which was a relatively new measure, reduced from 1,450 to 1,000 at the end of the third quarter. We also look at how fast we were. So the percentage of claims verified within 16 days increased rapidly since the introduction of this target, which shows the value of strategic planning. The percentage of direct claims lifted from 15% to 32%, I think as at the end of the year, is actually at 34%, which is a significant achievement for the RAF. Legal costs reduced from 29% of expenditure right down to 19% in the audited result and 12% as at quarter three. In RAND terms, if the 12.39% was 29%, our legal spend would be 8.7 billion rand a year, almost 5 billion more than now. The percentage of direct claims which converted to represented reduced. The settlement of direct claims improved. And of course, we did not succeed in reducing the number of writs. We did this successfully, and it started to increase when money ran out. The percentage reduction in legal cases has been reported. The turnaround time for simple claims has reduced significantly. What we measure with turnaround times is the age of the claim we pay. Now, because the focus has been on the backlog, you can see for your complex claims, we've actually been paying a lot of the older ones which were lying in the system. Our footprint expanded to 101 hospital service consultants and 6 customer service centers. In fact, we opened an office in Beaufort West 2 weeks ago. In terms of money, In 2011-12, our deficit, the amount we would be responsible to pay at any point in time, was 46 billion rand. It's currently, as at the moment, in excess of 140 billion rand. If you recall the Commission of SARS announcing they collected a trillion rand, essentially 14% of revenue collection is our measure of liability. The number of fraud convictions moves up and down depending on the types of cases you find, but you see that convictions have taken place. Although the conviction number in the blue column is 195, it's currently valued at half a billion rand worth of fraud detected before payment. The number of people with access in the communities has grown rapidly. Our vacancy rate, despite growing our structure, has reduced. Employment equity has always been a strong suit, and our BEE spend continues to rise. So, Chair, just in these two slides, you begin to see that the strategic plan is not a document for document's sake, but one that we actually then follow, and it's making the RAF better. If we look at the strategy then, what the board did 2 years ago was review the entire strategic plan, the five-year plan. And in that plan, it mapped out the annual performance targets. If it isn't broke, don't fix it. And that really has been the approach to our planning exercise. We've retained our vision, mission, and values. The vision is what we'd love to do, which is to provide world-class care to accident victims. The mission is taken from our law with the addition of safe use of our roads, and our five values continue to be what shapes our business. Those values are in fact in all of our scorecards as employees. Alignment of strategies to operations to the reality is the most important thing in success. So what we've done, we have seven strategic objectives. We've aligned them to our organizational structure. Each one has an executive responsible to do them, and then there are targets beneath each of those. I won't read them. I know you've seen the APP, but claim processing is the first. Accessible service matters if we follow the constitutional priority of Batubili. Effective financial management is critical when you're running short of money. Optimal IT services are important for us to operate. You can't do any of this without looking after your people, especially in a hostile environment like ours. The movement to RADS is a critical priority. It's been in our strategic plan for the last 4 years. And then, of course, in a short control environment. With three successive clean audits, unprecedented in the history of RAS, we definitely don't want to change. So ethics, forensic work play a part there too. Just without going into the details, some slight amendments to the APP, which was contained in the five-year plan, they really are just updates. This is documented in the plan itself. Under claims, we've adapted the claim numbers based on our financial position. In terms of IT, we've moved slightly ahead with an e-enablement plan, so we've adapted the targets. On the RAVs, though, we moved ahead with the funding model, treasury participation, so we've actually had to update it to bring deliverables forward. Under the control environment, DOT asked us to change the name of the database for crashes. And then there are a couple of targets where, because we've done better than expected, we've not kept them as they were, knowing we'd meet them. We've actually updated them based on our performance. Chairperson, without spending much time, in terms of alignment to NDP, 9-point plan, and economic transformation, what we've done is we have a table. It's got the NDP outcome, the 9-point plan, and then what RAF target, not just intention, what in the APP ties back to them, and we've grouped them into themes. So under economic transformation, it's in both the NDP and the 9-point plan. RAF on the road is very important, not just in terms of what you pay claimants, but by virtue of the stimulus in a local economy when you suddenly have catering, accommodation, transport over a few days up to a week of RAF staff members who are there. Road safety initiatives were run in Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and KZN. We actually employed, I think, 70 people to run 22 or 23 projects related to speed bumps. And then, of course, accessible services saves people money, which has an indirect benefit on the economy of that area. In terms of healthcare, covering the NDP, our contribution is post-crash care, rehabilitation, undertakings and the medical spend. Social protection definitely relies on the move to RADS. A developmental state, that's our HR target. So our contribution there would be performance management, skills assessment, employment equity, absenteeism, and gender policy. On fighting corruption, I think it's clear by its nature. We have the seventh objective in our strategic plan. In terms of nation building and social cohesion, we've developed and now will implement a BBBEE policy. We've already seen our BEE scorecard lift from a level 7 to level 5. And of course, we have an enterprise supply development plan which we're working on. The intention is to spend up to 0.3% of our spend on these policies in particular. If we then look at the money, we know that the Minister of Finance has recently delivered the budget speech. These figures were shared in the normal course of events with National Treasury and DOT a few months back. Net fuel sales, because our income is driven by the fuel levy plus how much fuel is sold. May I continue? Okay. Because it's driven by how much fuel is sold as well as the levy, we make assumptions on both. We assume fuel sales will go up by 1%. This was based on Treasury's advice that GDP would be 2%. We know from the budget speech it's actually projected to be at 0.9. There's a 1% fuel efficiency we build in. So essentially at a volume level, in real terms, volumes may not change in this year. Our fuel levy did not increase. The Minister of Finance mentioned a 30 cents increase. That's not for the RAF. 93% of all income will go to claims. Where productivity exceeds the cash we have, claims expenditure will be limited. Our admin is related to CPI. It is limited to 7% of revenue. Personnel costs are capped at 8. This includes salary increases as well as any movement of staff. And then the provision for claims incurred, which informs the liability, will grow throughout the medium term. You do have the financial projections, I think they're on page 79 of the APP document. But really to say, at a fuel levy level, we currently project 32 billion rand. It will grow to 34 billion and plateau at that level because there's no further increase in the fuel levy. You may ask why, if you're getting 154 cents in 1 year, you get 32 billion, in the next year, you get 34 billion. It's because when the fuel levy increase is announced in February, it takes effect in April, the cash lands in July. So this year we'll actually have the 154 over the whole calendar year. Our expenses, you do need to read the actual document to understand these numbers, but our expenses will grow from 55 billion to 77 billion rand in 2020. Remember, expenses at an accounting level are actual claims paid, the movement in the liability, plus any movement in the payments queuing. Essentially, we will grow our loss at an income statement level from 24 billion rand to 46 billion rand based on no revenue increase as well as the assumptions on claim increases. I had mentioned earlier that we will adapt our performance to what money is available. In practical terms, this means we will keep our productivity steady. Whilst we can actually do more, it's negative on the business to do that in this current financial position. So if you just look at the line called settled in each of the three parts, the top table shows personal claims, supplier claims, and the bottom table shows the sum of them all. You will see that we assume our settlement stays flat, so we don't change that. The number of claims we attend to stays the same. What we've seen in practice is that the number of new claims is actually growing rapidly. In fact, 31 March 2016, we will have reported 188,000 new claims, which is comparable to what we thought we'd see in 2019-20. But, of course, this means the balance of open claims as well as at a cash level, we're not going to see movements other than the cost of a claim. Our strategic challenges, Chair, we could go into many challenges, but there really are two. The first is inadequate funding. whether you like the RAF, whether you like the dispensation, whether you think it's the best or not. The truth is the expenditure far exceeds income. And this has been the case since 1981. Now we must be responsible about how we deal with this. The impact of inadequate funding, simply not having enough money to pay what we've settled, is claim processing slows. I mentioned 16,000 writs and the legal costs associated with it. By February, I think we had spent 100 million rand just on processing the writs. Whilst there are 6,000 creditors who understand the dynamic and patiently wait, there are a handful who can't, who impatiently instruct the sheriff, who force the process, who disrupt our business. It affects morale. It's not nice for some of our creditors to join the sheriff in removing our equipment and have our staff members work sitting on bricks. We have 700 dustbins removed, kettles and microwaves. It isn't nice to do that. The amazing thing about the people who work for the RAF is that they stayed. They sit on gym balls, they sit on plastic bins, they stay and they work despite the hardship they are confronted with. But this, of course, is not sustainable. The Treasury and the DOT know about this. If members of this committee remember this presentation 2 years ago at the Commodore, on one hand, we were commended by the committee, but the committee noted that at that point, we were short 2 billion rand. It's grown to 10 billion rand. Now, you can't keep running the business like that. And if one takes an objective view at it, it's irresponsible to allow the RAF to continue as it is. Do you want to throw 10 more billion rand at this inefficient administration? No. And the answer really is what should have been the answer in 1981, which is stop it. Put something in place that works. Work around what you can afford. The mitigation, we believe, is two-pronged. From a business perspective. So we have requested and we will continue to request additional funding. We are cognizant of our economic climate. We've heard the Minister of Finance. His is to say no to us, ours is to keep asking. And then of course stringent cash flow management. If you are short, Chair, you're short. So if you've got 100 rand in the pocket and you owe 150, no matter how you slice it or dice it, you aren't going to please everybody. The second leg, on that note, appreciating that really when we say the RAF is unsustainable, it's not a hypothesis, it's a reality. The second leg, the challenge is to continue the RAF and delay the introduction of RAF. I mentioned this before, but if you introduce a different dispensation in 2002 when the Commission of Inquiry sat, your exposure as government would be less than 10 billion rand. Our liability is now 140, projected in the APP to double in the next 4 years, which would be a quarter of a trillion rand. The impact of allowing the RAF to continue and delaying the introduction of RABs is that the liability grows. Inequity persists if you're on the ground and you listen to people who are victims of car crashes. The health benefits to victims of car crashes who do claim from the RAF remain unevenly spread. Two paralyzed people, both injured in a car crash, don't necessarily get the same medical support from the RAF. Expenditure continues to be directed away from claimants. No social security system sees upwards of 25% of all money going to somebody other than the recipient. And that would include the RAF costs. The mitigation is really to wind the RAF down as an urgency. And then, of course, to support, from our perspective, the DOT, as is required with RABs. In conclusion, our 2016-2020 strategic plan and the APP for the year we've just started are focused on medium-term performance and delivery while preparing for the future with a keen emphasis on processing more claims because they will come in and people have a right to claim. Doing so in less time, managing the cash flow strictly because we are short and will remain short, ensuring good governance and management of the business as is evident by independent, objective, private sector awards and recognition. Great effort is and will be placed on fulfilling the strategic plan as we've done in the last 3 years, addressing the challenges and risks. We can't run away from them. preventing the catastrophic socio-economic effects of accidents in our society, which we know. Although fewer people are dying on our roads, there are many still dying and who are injured. And of course, supporting the transition to RAVs. Graphically, just in closing, we continue to go and move about throughout the country and in every community we've been received. The top left is in Natal. We've handed out many car seats at different roads, road safety initiatives and roadblocks. In doing our work and educating school kids, we couldn't shake the fact that many of these kids stood and listened to road safety, but they were barefoot. So we started a CSR project where we typically provide shoes to these kids. What we've done, of course, in the same compassionate view, is expand that to sanitary towels and toiletries for your teenage girls in schools. We've serviced communities where they are. You can see the bottom right is the response you get in a community hall. We are cognizant of the fact that 140,000 people rely on us for medical care. We actually have made 20,000 payments in the last financial year. So we interact with victims of crashes. We've recently had meetings with the disabled people of South Africa. We have a long-standing relationship with QASA, Association for Paraplegics and Quadriplegics. And despite all our challenges, despite having insufficient money, despite the adversarial environment, despite 16,000 RIDs, despite the creditors' book of 10 billion rand, RAF, as you know it, actually wins awards and will continue to do so. Chairperson, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, CEO. I can see that this RAF deals with money. It also has doctors there. So, yeah, we shall say, notice that I hope our money is very well secured with doctors. Horace Mande?
Honorable Lawson.
Thanks, sir. I'm good. And,
let's limit it to three questions.
No.
Short three questions, then so that you can be able to. Thanks.
Okay, sir. I understand this, Dr. Watson, what you are saying about the RAF when you said that it's no more sustainable. But to do, try to check clearly what are the causes of it being unsustainable, maybe on the part of the fund itself. Is there anything which is happening within the fund which is causing the fund to address that problem? And what if not the mandate, as you said, is to pay the compensation? What does this to show us this cost, this money should be, I think, for the victims. So we wanted to see the clarity, because that rough on the roads, most of the victims, they get money which it can be finished within a month or 2 years, because the fund is settling very low. And I don't think it's fair for the victims, because like people, they're very poor. When they see 50,000, 60,000, they're certainly easy. But is that money going to be sustainable? When will the detail of the funding model of RAF be presented for the school community? And in terms of which provision in the RAF Act itself, is direct claim so this title. It's like rough on the road, because it's not in the act. It's just a thing of common sense, because it's like it's unlawful activity which is happening there. And when will the RAF workshop take place? The workshop, maybe the hospital, the infrastructure, everything. Because once it becomes a law, it can be maybe a white elephant, because it won't be easy to be practical. Chairman, maybe I'll come again, because you said.
Horace Mande.
Mr. Chairman.
Honourable Singha, thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation, Dr. Watson. Firstly, I would like to know, how do you treat, in terms of processing, prescribed direct claims? In terms of payment, do you differentiate between how you pay and what you pay panel lawyers versus claimant lawyers? And then something that was very close to me, in terms of protecting the fund, was the function of the FITT unit, which you decided to close in September or August of last year. And at that stage, a couple of hundred cases were in court and also being investigated. What measures have you taken to, again, guarantee some sort of protection for the fund? What are your plans for RAF on the road? And since there's been quite a bit of mudslinging between RAF and claimant lawyers in particular, do you think that the relationship would improve from here on? And then lastly, what percentage of your monthly payments do you allocate in payment agreements that you have with lawyers or lawyer companies? Thank you, Chair.
All of your questions? Yeah, cover them there.
Thank you, Chair. Just two main questions. I see that RF is inviting and dealing with direct claims. And my understanding for RF, and we read the documentation, is that it's there to administer. It's not there to administer, it's there to pay compensation. And not administer claims. So if you just unpack that. And then in March last year, I submitted a set of questions to the minister, and the reply came back. I'll just preface it by saying on page 11 and various other parts of the presentation, Dr. Watson said that, you know, that funding's inadequate. But I find that interesting because last year I received replies to a question asking about the staff complement in the RAF. And in the last three financial years, it has grown by 835 new staff members. That's from 2011 to 2014. So, I mean, I'm sure it's grown since then. And the reply also indicated that there's an excess of 2,600 staff. And it sounds exorbitant. And looking at the list of the staff descriptions, there are a lot of people doing the same type of thing. Surely this is contributing to the lack of funds. And a lot of the stuff could be automated, could be improved, could be done in a different way. And how was it that the RAF was able to function without these 835 additional staff before, that then now we have to pay these extra salaries for? Thank you. Just one more question, just on the RAF on the road, is how much is spent on the RAF on the road?
The future, members and the RAF team. First, I just want to welcome the report, and then also acknowledge in terms of accessibility, Chairperson, and publicity. That in the province where I come from, I see them more visible. They are doing a lot of work in terms of being visible in the eyes of the public. I see lots of cars and branded RAF and adverts. So what I want to know, Chairperson, is the RAF's transition plan. I was not here last time when they presented the APP. I came late in the year last year. Maybe do you have this plan as a committee chairperson? So I don't ask a relevant question. I've got an interest in starting the plan from RAF to RAF's dispensation. How smooth is it going to be? So that we don't have a disruptive kind of a transition from one dispensation to another. If the committee in its archives has that plan, I will welcome that the secretary provides me with the plan so that I understand the system. How is it going to function? Is it going to be much better than what we have, and what convinces us that the new system will, the new disposition will be much better? So that's the clarity, Chairperson. You can clarify me if you have information. Thanks.
All right, Falco. Thanks, Chair. I've got, thank you for the presentation. I've got a similar question, similar to what Honorable Masongani has just asked about the when there's shift from RAF to RAF stage, when they reach that, how will that affect their organizations? That if it's there in our books, old as we are, we can forget, but we must be reminded. The question I was to ask, Chair, is to ask a question in a scenario where a claimant is denying the fact that the claim was, if the claim has been paid to lawyers and the information is not available to the victim, what role does RAF play? Do they become party to the case? What do they do? How do they assist the victim if the victim is claiming that he has never received the lump sum or whatever was paid by RAF, mm-hmm. when there is a middleman, which in the case, which are the lawyers? What role do they play as RAF in that case? Thanks, Chair.
Correspondent.
Chairperson, I first of all, thank you very much for the presentation, and also it shows that it is aligned with goals with the NDP, MTSF, and the SONA. Because what kills the people the most is that some of the people, when they come here, they are not ready. They don't link their programs with the activities of the cabinet or the government itself. And then also, thank you very much for your achievements to score out of 7-5, which is very rare. In the past, never happened. But saying about, you say, Chairperson, with the issue of RAF, there is this thing which is still ongoing. I'll come first with this question which was raised by Mama. The question will be simple. In a case where there is an allegation that a third person continuously doubt the man, what role is the RAF playing to protect the innocent person? Because sharks are still there. And then again, you see, from your own presentation, there is a presentation which is worrying me. You know, this one on page 3, the first one, the issue of legal. Don't open wounds, please. With leaders, please don't open wounds. Why I'm saying that? You give the background of the 70-year compensation regime and also the insolvency of 1981. You know, it goes back when we discuss, when we debate some of the issues, some people, they feel offensive. Why is it there? Because the previous people, they kept quiet. After 1981, people kept quiet. Why not of choices? How do you allow the thing which is insolvent to continue? That is the starting point. Why can you allow such a thing? Therefore, we can't transform. I'll repeat again. We cannot transform what cannot be repairable. That's why I'm concerned about this thing. Why do you bring it back here? To understand, we gave you mandates. There was a sexual commission. There were findings. There were recommendations that we won't support any idea of a third person, third party. let the let these monies go to straight to the people, because the involvement, even myself personally, I was a victim of a third party. You see, let us not go back to that one. And my another thing which I wanted to find out, out of those recommendations by such one commission, in terms of implementation, I'm not Chairperson, am I out of order, Chairperson? You don't protect me because you are yourself. You know? Thank you, ma'am. The thing is, one, I think we must not accept, since the new dispensation, our responsibilities is to get rid with all this sinister system, which are like 99-year lease, which are putting people still in slavery. Keep it up and carry on to pay the people direct. Let the visibility of the road accident fund be more visible than what it is now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Robert.
No, Chair, I will be short because it's been long day, it's been a long day today. Doctor, you speak about the mandate, and you say the mandate in terms of the Act as amended 1996 is the payment of compensation according to the Act, is to do the cover for South African road users that were involved in an accident. When you conclude, towards the conclusion, you raise a double barrel problem. You raise the issue about uneven spread of the money from the people that were involved in the same accident. One, two, you raise another double barrel problem: the money be directed away from the claimant. Those are the two problems that you raise. Now, I just want to ask you this: given the mandate and given the application to the uneven spread issue, including the claimant money being directed away from the claimant, surely there's a big problem. There's a huge problem there, because if I understand you correctly, then it's actually not necessarily in keeping with the mandate. Now, perhaps you could share a little bit of light in terms of those two short sentences that becomes a problem, and you end up by saying the delay or continued delay of the RAPS will continue to have this particular problem. Maybe if you could share light in that particular section, and also so that when we write the report, so later in this report we will be able to reflect on that particular aspect. We know that the last time there's been a discussion about the workshop and stuff like that, and we kept saying we don't have the act, we don't have the amended bill on the table, so we can't have a workshop or something that doesn't exist. I think that's what we have had as a discussion in the committee, which I still think it's probably the same position, that we don't necessarily have any amended act right now, and therefore a discussion on something that is not before the committee is probably not going to happen, because there's nothing to consider. Maybe just those are two questions for me, Chair, if you could just ask the doctor, a good doctor there, to share light on that, because that will help us to develop the recommendation in our report.
Okay. Thank you very much. In what stage is the RAPS the level of RAPS at the present moment, what stage it is? and what is it expected to be implemented? If we can be able to resources, because we understand that its intention is to assist the victims. we understand. Let's just give it to you back so that we can respond to Council.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks to the committee for the question. I'll take them in the order. I'll try not to group them. So the first is the RAF is unsustainable. What is that due to the fund? I think we must be careful to never jump to conclusions. So when you talk sustainability, up front, your income and your expenditure should match. But now in the RAF, you've got income determined by a fuel levy, determined by the Minister of Finance, in a law outside of the RAF Act, based on affordability. Can consumers afford it or not? There's no exercise to say how many crashes were there, how many cars are there, how many new licensed drivers are there, how many roads were expanded, how many new roads were built. It's purely affordability. Expenditure is driven by what claims experience you have. But remember, under the RAF Act, you can have claims come in from the date of the accident up to 18 years when a child reached maturity. So you can't really plan at that level. Secondly, if you're looking at expenditure, you need to then say, well, where does the money go? So the pie currently goes 5+ billion rand to attorneys. Add another sort of 2 or 3 billion rand for intermediaries like actuaries, assessors, investigators. Then you've got what's left as compensation. From an RAF perspective, if you just want to look at our money, we've really done well and not been recognized effectively for it by containing our costs. Our percentage of expenditure is 4% for admin expenses. It's 4 for people, 3 for admin. Nobody ever pats us on the back for that, but that is exceptionally low. It's lower than many pension funds and medical schemes in other parts of our economy. What do we do in terms of unsustainability? You're always going to have, if you receive 180,000 new claims, you will have exceptions. You will have examples where you get it wrong. It's like Home Affairs will misspell a surname. It's how we learn from it. What I think we don't do well as RAF, and this committee and the minister has addressed in our strategic plan, which is what I showed you earlier, is we don't work as fast as we can. We don't make optimal use of our own expertise, but rather relying on our attorneys too many times. I think those are two things from our part where you can argue we're not tying our weight. But the strat plan, the APP, has targets for turnaround times, for legal costs, and we're meeting and exceeding them. So we're doing our part. Then you can ask yourself the question, so what are motorists, what are third parties doing to save costs? One of the biggest cost savers at the moment, if we are honest about it in this meeting, is actually going to court. So in the last financial year, ending 31 March, 14,400 trials or court orders were issued, not those for revenue. The claimed amount from attorneys exceeded 15 billion rand. The judges ruled on an amount of 11.3 billion, saving 3.7 billion. Now, if we as an RAF can get to a point where we do better when we go to court, we can save even more money. So I will accept we can do things to make it more sustainable. But as the chairperson one of the final members said, you can't save what doesn't work. I mean, there's a point where you have to say, look, if you want to keep this menu of benefits, pay for it. You can't, you know, if you just look at assets and liabilities, 1 to 14, you can't contribute 1 rand but want 14 rand worth of goods. Either start paying 14 rand or rationalize your 14 to 1. But if for 34 years you know the two don't match, it's irresponsible to continue, all of us. So we do have a part to play, and I mean, I think we're doing it, and our strat plan covers it. You then spoke about our mandate is to pay claimants. That, I mean, mandate, I'm talking broadly. Yes, we must pay claimants. The question then goes on to RAF on the Road, the money is for victims. If you are implying by the question that RAF on the Road is for direct claimants, right? then we must appreciate that our spend on direct claims is 1/10 of expenditure. Now, all that money goes to that claimant, which means on 90% of the spend, all that money does not go to the claimant. And we've seen recent court cases where third parties are taking excessive amounts of money. So if you really want to make money go to claimants, you in essence are encouraging that all claims should be direct, which I would agree with. Okay? If you're then asking, is the amount of money paid to victims appropriate? It's wrong. It really is wrong to make an assumption that you underpay direct claims. Number one, it's covered in our annual report. Our statutory actuary, appointed by the FSB, has a section in our financial statements where they unpack the spend on direct and represented claims. And what they found is that the biggest difference between the two, per heads of damage, is the cost associated with it. Without a doubt, funeral claims are typically more expensive for direct claimants. Loss of earnings is much cheaper for direct claimants because they're poor. Supply and demand, I heard the chair, a retired judge in the Medical Legal Society on Saturday at a legal workshop, actually make a point in medical negligence, and he said, what you typically find is behavior follows the profit. So if you get money on commission or through contingency fee, and you follow, it implies the bigger the settlement, the bigger your cut, which means you chase more expensive claims, which means third parties who are profit-driven may not necessarily want cheaper claims. Where this becomes a little true, and we're still at an early stage of investigating it, is direct claims, 60%+ are funeral claims. It's 11,000 Rand. For represented claims, those represented by an attorney, 60%+ are loss of earnings at an average in excess of 200,000 claims. So if you just look at the total average, you're not comparing apples with apples. Which I think is something we should appreciate. We're trying to understand that more. We don't have demographic data related to the claimants at a cash level, but we're going to look at it. But you see a difference in the mix. Direct claims typically are more funeral claims, some loss of support is the family. Represented claims are loss of earning claims, which often hit the ceiling. But I don't think it would be correct to assume that a direct claim is an underpayment. And it is looked at by our statutory actuaries. In terms of funding for RADs, Chairperson, that work was done. Of course, remember, DOT is responsible for legislation, for drafting it. They consult another national department, National Treasury. Our job is to facilitate and support. Our actuaries did do actuarial work. The models were seen by National Treasury. And in principle, I think we are now on the same page. So when the item gets to Cabinet, it will have a funding model, and I believe the last time I heard DOT speak about it, that's when the portfolio committee would have access to some of this information. On the Act and direct claims, I am not a lawyer. I know I can't point to the exact clause right now, but there's no clause in the Act that prohibits direct claims. Okay, I think, on this one. Okay, go ahead. Okay, I've dealt with the perception of undersettlement.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to add to the questions posed by Honorable Lau. I just want to assure the committee that as the board, we do engage management very much from the perspective of protecting the general public. And if one looks at the issue of undersettling regarding claims that are dealt with directly. The board has sought independent assessment from actuaries to give us comfort that direct claimants are not prejudiced in terms of how we settle the fund. And it's a figure we monitor closely, and we can assure you that from where we sit, direct claimants are not prejudiced. The savings come from the legal side as expected. Now, regarding the still on the ref on the road issue, I would like to understand more how, Honorable Laud's point that the ref on the road is unlawful, but I would like to just point two slides. I don't know what slide it is, but number benefits realized from the strategic plan. The KPI slide. Yeah, I think I just wanted to point out here, I mean, Ref on the Road is not only just about dealing with claims, it's about an outreach project that allows us to provide a whole lot more. And one of the biggest successes is how Ref on the Road has enabled us to link arms with other departments. The CEO can tell you what the other departments that come in an integrated fashion where we provide services from Home Affairs, from Department of Health, from the police. But I just wanted to refer specifically to that percentage of direct claims originated line on the KPIs, which shows that from 2011 we've moved from 15% of claims being direct to the point where we've doubled that at 32%. And one needs to look at that with the very next line item, which is reduction in legal costs, where you're seeing the opposite, where you're starting from a third of our costs being legal costs, where we're now at 12%. Those are linked, and they show exactly why they should continue to be a key strategic intervention from the board perspective. One of the questions that has been posed was, how much does Ref on the Road cost? Those two lines tell you that the benefit far outweighs whatever cost you can, and most of them obviously cannot be accounted for. But the CEO made reference that by a reduction in legal costs, we save the fund about 5 billion rand, and a lot of it has to do with the issue of direct claims. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I think just another point on sustainability, because our chair has mentioned.
That's the last point.
Sorry?
That's the last point.
Okay, let me respond to the others then. Okay, I won't dwell there. On when is RAS implemented? From our strategic plan, we contribute to DOT. My understanding from the Minister of Finance in last year's budget speech was that it should have happened before. But before 31 March 2016, the bill should have arrived in Parliament. So I would assume it is a priority. I think from DOT's APP, it does speak to 2016-17 getting a cabinet decision. On the process for prescribed direct claims, this received a lot of attention a year ago, I think somewhat unfairly. How do we deal with it? Direct claims were introduced before 2010. It wasn't a big project. There weren't many in number. From about 2010-11, you started seeing more and more. And it wasn't well managed. I mean, let's be honest about it. The focus was on how you get them. The RAF had a practice. So when a claim prescribed, it would instruct its attorney to issue a summons, because our law provides that the only way to interrupt prescription is through the summons. So a represented matter is easy. The attorney issues the summons. The claim stays alive. In 2012, shortly after I started working at the RAF, I think it's in fact the second board meeting, the board approved a policy on how we can deal with it in a different way, looking at case law on prescription in state services. A little while later, we had a direct claim policy, and last year, following all the attention, we have an updated policy and SOP for our staff members. Now, we did an audit. Of course, we respond to all challenges. We found that there were 2,000 direct claims, so about 3% of the total number received in the 3 years, which had prescribed. We looked at them. We establish any exceptions and anomalies. And then we built in place various checks. We have IT system checks on prescription, which actually picked up that there were almost 9,000 either prescribing or about to prescribe. Remember, over a three-year period, we received 450,000 claims in addition to what we have. Which I think is fine. And I mean, I think it's good that we are kept on our toes and made to look at things. What I find unfair, though, is that in all this discussion, nobody asks, so what happens to the claimants represented by an attorney where it prescribes? Now, the Fidelity Fund last year wrote about the increase in expenditure on their part on prescribed representative claims. But no one asked. We had no PAYA, no PAJA, no parliamentary question on prescribed representative matters. But as good corporate citizens, when we dealt with the media last year about this matter, we started looking at prescribed representative matters. And our team has actually, by 31 March, repudiated 53,000 representative claims where they were submitted by a professional and nothing happened. Now, who's fighting for those claims? If we're doing all of this in the interest of claimants, services, benefits, who's fighting for that? It's wrong. I don't think we must separate out as if direct claimants are a special group of people, or it's wrong for the RAF to render services to direct claims. So we look at it holistically to give you comfort. We don't deal with only direct claims prescribing. We also look at the representative. Then there's issues of payments to panel and plaintiffs. No creditor at the moment is on a current 30-day cycle, just by virtue of how short we are of cash. Our panel of attorneys actually has payments which track back to 150 days. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I read it in the plane, I think we almost have 30 million rand in a category for our suppliers. So they also have to wait. In terms of the FITT, our forensic team, the closure, it also got into the media and it was quite a sensational topic. But this was an agreement we signed a long time ago with the NPA. A lot of money gets put in it, but we couldn't justify the value. We at the same time hired a head of forensic from the SIU who had direct relationships with these entities. And we said, why do you need to have a separate MOU to engage with these different authorities? So we brought that to an end. We certainly weren't happy at an accounting level with how it was run. And the work continued. There were a little less than 100 matters on the court roll. We engaged all of the prosecutors in those and they proceeded. What I can tell you, we've recently also signed an agreement with SIU, and as I had mentioned verbally, it's not printed. By the end of this 15-16 financial year, 500 million rand had actually, which is a record high, had actually been detected before payment. So our team continues to work. It wasn't an easy choice, but it was the right one. I can't stand here in front of you and say we want to have a well-governed RAF, but there's an MOU which I don't think is the most efficient. But the engagements with the stakeholders are important. RAF on the road, how much is spent, it depends on the size, the number of claims, and the number of staff who go. Typically, we work it out to something like 150 to 250 rand per claim and fee. We rationalize it at that level. Let's not look at that expense by itself. Let's remember, as the chair mentioned, that every direct claim is a claim process without using legal costs, which means on average you'll save 111,000 for each one. In this last financial year, it means those 34% of claims which are direct saved us a billion. If they were represented, we'd have spent a billion more, we'd have been a billion rand short in addition to what we are. In terms of money inadequate staff complement, I think that the question I'll answer, but I must say it's not wrong to grow a business. It's not wrong to grow a structure. It's definitely not right to forget the history. So in 2011-12, when we met 53% of the targets, I attended my first PCOT, but it's different members. And I remember the sense was, RAF, you're not working. RAF, you've got AG queries. One of the most simple AG query was registration of documents. People aren't stamping, they're time stamping documents. Now, you'd assume in any business you've got a control over your time stamping. And what had happened to the RAF over the 5 years preceding 2012 is some of these teams just fell away. The institution actually shrunk in size. So to use the 2012 headcount as a base, assuming it's normal, is wrong. Those number of people achieved 53% of the targets and had internal control findings. If you want to assess whether there was value for money in the more people we hired, let's ask ourselves this. To move from 54% of targets met to 84% is a 30% increase. 30% or 54% is 60%, which means our productivity improved by 60% against performance targets. Our headcount didn't grow by 60%. So in fact, you have value for money. Each additional person we hired achieved more than we did before. if you apply the same ratio of 60% on the headcount to expenditure. Expenditure went from 12 billion in 2012 to 26 billion rand last year in 2014-15. Right? So 12 to 26 is over 200% increase. Our headcount didn't grow by 200%, which means the outputs per head increased. And we should never underplay that. The growth in our headcount was budgeted for. It was approved by the Treasury. In fact, they gave us the money in 2012 during this process. They actually said, here you have it. What we did do, as I mentioned, that we need to control our productivity based on the available money, we don't expect to grow further. We think we have the necessary teams, we have a standard organizational structure, we now need to maximize the value we get out of it. In terms of RAD's accessibility, thank you very much. We've worked hard at it. We don't get recognized for it, but through those 101 hospital offices and the 6 customer walk-in centers, to the year ending 31 March, we saw 140,000 people. Our call center, it used to be 5 people in 2012, but we grew it as part of that growth to 50. For the first time, they answered 300,000 calls in the last 12 months, which is almost 50,000 more than the year before. That's value for money. On RAD's transition plan, it's what we want to do in this financial year. It is a project. We have a PMO. We've mapped it out. We look at what RAF requires, what RAS requires, and we anticipate for 8 years between the two, you'd be running both laws. Because when you switch off the RAF Act, remember, claims can still come in prior to that date. You still have to administer them under the RAF Act. So we think that will take about 8 years for the bulk of it to run off. So the project deals with mapping those out, and the team has done well. I think when the bill comes to the peak or through DOT, it is something we definitely can begin to share with you, because it's not about my way, your way, our way. It's really about what is the right way, and we need to be on our toes. On the issue of mudslinging, we've slung no mud. A lot gets slung at us, but we've tried to conduct ourselves professionally at all times. Our staff engages with the law societies. And I know on Saturday with the Chief Justice, we actually have an attendee at the National Efficiency Enhancement Committee. And there's a subcommittee which we'll participate on, which may actually be hosted at our office, which just shows you how we relate with the fraternity. We also saw the BLA, the Black Lawyers Association, not too long ago. On, Chair, I'm moving now. Claims paid to lawyers. Yeah, it's a problem. I mean, the power of attorney given to the lawyer does limit what we can do. If we think there's fraud, our forensic team investigates, but this is where a working relationship with the law society comes in. We refer people there. It's for the profession to regulate what may be wrong. I know a lot of people directed at us, and we do see many of these. We actually see many cases. On the legacy and opening wounds, when the committee member said factual, it actually is a strong point. A lot of these things are flawed and should have been fixed a long time ago. We can't lament the past, but here we are today, so it's for us to make a decision on how we move forward. On the uneven spread of care and money being directed away toward the end there, I think really it's just the issue of fault. You know, we're not compensating on the basis of need. You compensate on to what extent did the fault cause you to lose. So you may need a whole wheelchair, but your fault and your loss may not necessitate that you actually get all of that, which is not right. If you want to see in practice, in our financial statements, Chairperson, we have a section toward the end of the notes where we say we've issued 140,000 undertakings. These are certificates where we pay for care. But not everybody has a full undertaking. Now, they're responsible to pay a portion depending on the fault. And of that 140,000, in the last financial audited figure, 4,500 people claimed. And it's sad to know that you have a system where 140,000 people have a certificate and such a small percentage use it. And many don't even afford the co-pays, which is a problem. On the money being directed away from the claimant, I think if we talk social security, if you pay 100 rand, you want the recipient to get 100. And that's just not the case in RAF dispensation. On the delays, it's really the growth in the liability. I mean, that is it. And it's a real liability. If you look at our cash position now, 2 years ago when we had this session, we said, well, in fact, last year when the power went off, we said we project to be short by 11 billion and we are 10.4. You know, so the projections are not false. They are actually informed projections by our CFO and her team. Where's RABS now? The bill, as you know, Chair, was advertised twice for public comments, extended commentary windows. It's been adapted and modified. It went to NEDLAC. It's been certified. We were very pleased that NEDLAC endorsed the objects. So the issues of no fault, defined benefits they agreed to. There, of course, are different objections depending on the stakeholder to time frames and limits. So what the team is doing now, the Minister of Finance has written to the Minister of Transport. There's just some issues around protecting affordability, not increasing the offering, but just protecting affordability. The Minister of Finance wants us to work on, but then really to go through the cabinet process and come to you. Again, I reiterate, Chairperson, it's not our work, it's DOT's work. We're not, as a public entity, responsible for drafting and presenting legislative changes. But I think, Chair, that really would be the quick take on the points.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. CEO, I think we'll continue to make sure that you protect the community, saving money, and also so that at least we are checking forward, you know, a good South African. Now, when you're busy explaining the economic scale, I could be able to understand, you know, a person deserves such kind of a particular amount of money, but it gets cut along the way. The real person supposed to receive that money receive a smaller amount of money because of things that, you know, that's supposed to be there. So when people engage with you directly, people get everything that you. So I think that should be able to be dealt with severely in the department.
Thanks, Chair. Just to indicate that probably to take it further from the presentation by the CEO and the Chairperson to say, I think we, as a department, will recognize that this will be a process that will draw a lot of attention. We are moving from a one system to a new system. So the fortunate part is that I think our system of policy and legislation development provides for public interaction from the executive side, which is cabinet, and when we then table this process through to parliament, stakeholders and whatever interested party will be able to again participate in the consultation part when the portfolio committee on transport starts with this process when it's able to. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. I'm loud.
No, I'm not asking for that.
Okay.
I'm just asking that I be allowed maybe to write my remaining questions to the CEO so that he will respond to me.
Okay, you must write it via me.
Okay, no.
I must screen it first.
Yeah. Okay.
Must go via the secretary.
Okay, no, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, that's the follow the procedure, protocol.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Okay,
yeah.
Because I was supposed to ask
him.
Yeah,
yeah. No, don't worry. Yeah. And the CEO will have to respond to you. It's good that, you know, the CEO is a doctor.
Mm.
So I'll give you a lecture, probably can supervise you to graduate as well. Thank you very much, General Members. It was a very fruitful day that we engaged with these entities. Hopefully we can be able to meet tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning, we're meeting in Max Building in committee room 314 at 9 o'clock we're starting with our meeting so that you can finish up early. I want to make sure that it is at 12 o'clock we're done with our meeting, and surely I normally keep my promise. Thank you very much, honorable members, for attending. Let's meet tomorrow, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, doctors, for attending.
Check with you again before
the meeting. Thank you. So,
Can you document that?
No.
Yeah, correct.